my dog.
This is LD Arrington's beautiful powder blue.
Capri blue,
1940
Cabriolet
Continental, which LD Arrington of
Rocky Mount, Virginia,
has brought his incredibly beautifully restored Lincoln Continental down to St. Augustine to assist in our shoot of Bob Gregory's interview. And Ms. Mike Shea of Gainesville, Florida, who is a longtime Ford dealer in Gainesville. And this incredible machine, how did you happen to restore it? Where did you get it and how did you happen to restore it?
I bought the car in Roanoke, Virginia back in 77.
Mm-hmm.
1977.
Yeah.
And immediately started a restoration on it. The car originally was shipped to the Richmond district, which I think is San Francisco, California.
Oh yes, yeah, Richmond, California, right. Mm-hmm. It's north of San Francisco.
It was originally shipped there. I haven't been able to secure information as yet as to how it got back across country and when, other than I know it was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania in the late 40s, like 47, 48 range.
You have the original build card. Who was, where was it shipped? It was shipped from Dearborn to from Detroit.
Richmond.
Detroit to Richmond, California.
Yes,
In what day?
It was assembled on May the 13th, 1940, mm-hmm. and shipped on the 15th of May.
To Richmond. Which would be the Ford Northern California district.
Yes.
At the time.
Yes.
Now, it was obviously sold. Does the build card show the dealer?
No.
It doesn't list it.
No.
Obviously sold somewhere in California.
Yes.
But it got back to
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
In the late 40s.
The late 40s.
Late 40s.
Who did you buy it from?
I bought it from a Bill Height, H-I-T-E, in Roanoke, Virginia, which was a used car dealer. He bought the car at an auction in the early 70s out of Pulaski, Virginia,
mm-hmm.
at a car auction. He had intents of restoring it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a lot of us do, he kept it a few years and then gave up on it and decided to sell it. So I purchased it from him.
Well, now, Mr.
Height,
he was a dealer in...
He was a used car dealer, but he bought this car. He always liked them. He bought this car to restore for his own personal use.
Okay. Now, don't go away, Mike. Where are you bought it again in...
In 77.
77, uh-huh. What'd you pay for it?
I paid $7,000.
Did that, at that time, did that seem to be a fair price for what you got?
Yeah.
Or a bit inflated?
No, that was going market.
Okay. What condition was it in when you bought it?
Well, it wasn't running. The engine was locked up in it, and the engine had been pulled and disassembled.
Oh. You
know, and so I didn't have an engine in it. I had the parts in boxes.
But you had the complete engine parts?
Well, mostly.
Yeah.
But
you were able to get original components to flesh out the engine.
Right, from the people in our business that...
Right, in the Lincoln Continental Restoration
right.
business, of which Mr. Shea is,
yeah.
is a very interested participant. What do you think of this this vehicle in front of us today, this magnificent vehicle?
Well, in mine and I think everyone else's estimation in the club, I feel that it's probably the finest example in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't ask for a better color for the car. I think this color, probably more than most of the other colors that were available,
mm-hmm.
Looks best on this car. Red leather interior,
mm-hmm.
and the tan top.
The original red leather interior?
Yes.
Right. And the tan top.
Right.
It has an interesting hubcap.
It has the Lincoln Zephyr hubcap because at that time the car was still considered to be a Lincoln Zephyr. It wasn't until 1941.
Part of the Lincoln Zephyr line.
Part of the Lincoln Zephyr line, not until 41 the day.
Did you have the Continental script? Well, would you say that this is, as you've said previously, but let me reiterate, would you say this is probably the most the best restoration that you've seen of the 1940 Lincoln Continental?
Of the 40 models that I've seen, I think it's the finest restoration and the finest example and the most perfect example that there is today.
That was Mike Shea. Thank you, Mike. Mr. Arrington, L.D. Arrington, what you have to offer to that, to add to that?
Well, it is a pretty good example. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of hard work. It took many, many hours. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of research by phone, letters,
mm-hmm. right.
With the various people in the organization that knows the cause to find the true, authentic way to restore.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I surprised a lot of people when I brought it out, being my first Lincoln to restore, as authentic as it was.
Mm-hmm. Let's move back to the along the side of the car to the back. What about the fender skirts that cover the rear wheels? They're obviously authentic.
Yes.
What do you think of them in terms of aesthetic appreciation of the car's shape?
Well, it certainly adds to it, and it was designed for it because it doesn't it looks horrible without them.
Right. Okay. Fine. Good.
You know, it was made for it,
mm-hmm.
and I think it has to have them to have the right appearance.
One of the hallmarks of the Lincoln Continental, of course, is the gentle sloping trunk shape and the tire. When did the tire cover come immediately?
Yes. It was only 40. The 39, 40. The first prototype didn't have a tire
didn't
cover.
Have a tire
so
cover.
I understand.
Yeah. So, but the 40 did. The production right. 40 did have
did
a tire
40.
Cover.
Mm-hmm.
And as Mr. Gregory has so succinctly stated, there was no room in the trunk.
That's true.
It had to go outside.
It had to go outside. And the stainless across the bottom edge of the car, it was added. I'm not sure what number in production, but the original ones did not have it.
The original 40s?
Yes, the very first ones.
Mm-hmm.
We see factory photographs.
Yes.
The ones they photographed to do the artwork from did not have.
Mm-hmm. Did not have it. Describe that in some detail. The
stainless molding up the rocker panel.
Right.
Rocker panel.
That in the early production of the 1940 run, it did not have those.
I'm not sure what point it was added.
How about the bumpers? By today's standards, they seem a bit insubstantial.
Yes, but they are made of steel.
Right.
They are.
They're not made of carbon. They're made of steel.
That's right.
They are
made of steel. They're very hard. Very hard.
Was there an original light illuminating the license tag?
Yes. We refer to that as the Cobra head.
Cobra head. Okay. And that's part of the original 1940
yes.
design.
Uh huh. I see Mr. Gregory came up.
Yes, yes, we had a marvelous session with him this morning. Yeah.
Well, that's great.
The flush lines, with the smooth, gentle, sloping flush lines, remarkable for its time.
Oh, it sure was. It was why it was a pace setter.
Right.
Pin setter.
Exactly.
It sure was. It was number two.
Let's start again. What color is it, Mr.
Green? Blue. Yeah.
What do you think, Bob Gregory? What do you think of this color?
Oh, I like it. It's beautiful.
Okay, but you're starting to say
I don't
that.
I care about blue normally.
You're not a blue fan.
No, but this is a beautiful gray blue.
Can you describe in verbal terms exactly how subtle this blue color is?
Yes, we had a color on the first Mercury's, which was a steel blue. A little darker than that.
Yes.
That's a beautiful color, particularly those nice white sidewalls.
From the research,
go ahead. Yes.
Research, we've been able to establish that this color was second only to black.
In popularity,
production. It outnumbered burgundy by, I believe, two or three cars.
Really? How long was this color continued?
Just through 40.
40 only.
41, I think it changed slightly.
Yeah.
We were discussing the fender skirts, Bob Gregory.
Yeah.
What are your feelings on why you included the fender skirts?
Well, that was a carryover from the fenders. I think that's a standard Lincoln fender of that
mm-hmm.
era.
Okay.
And
you kept them on.
It doesn't look right with a cutout without the skirt on it. It's not a normal symmetrical cutout.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm.
And I like my Continental, because I was a 46, 47. they had a symmetrical cutout, but a lot of people didn't want the fender screw.
Just hadn't been exposed to the elements. No. It will fade too if it's out here.
Well protected. Yeah. Nice leather. But I have a leather. My continental was gray. Just medium gray, like.
So you mentioned Mr. Ford's favorite gray. What was it? Eagle gray.
What I call that eagle gray.
Eagle gray. Yeah.
Particular significance.
Yeah. One more question. When the 41s came out, door handle. Why was that?
I don't know.
Do you remember what?
I went along with the company.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Fine. Yeah. Good.
It wasn't
able to
take
this.
Yeah, that's good.
That's
helpful. Go trim
on the instrument.
That's right. God. The elimination of door handles went along with the flush.
It was a style change, modernizing it.
Yeah.
But they came out with that flush door handle, the push button thing to release it.
Did you have? You obviously had dual rear outside view mirrors.
Yeah, that was always standard. I believe it was standard. All of them I've seen.
Did the aerial retract electrically?
I couldn't answer that.
In 40, it didn't. But it was vacuumed in 41.
Okay, vacuumed in 41.
I didn't get into the accessories too much. Whole line of accessories that switched them all around. We didn't have anything to do with that. Good. But it's beautiful.
What do you think?
It was so pretty.
Isn't it gorgeous?
Couldn't have been pretty coming off the production line.
No, that's right.
Yeah, right you are, yeah. Well, they didn't have that hand-finished look, though. Is this Lincoln Zephyr teardrop? Is that authentic or is
that's a club? That's a club.
That's a club symbol. Oh, okay.
That was a symbol they used, I think, for a little boat.
It was.
One time.
But this is issued by the Zephyr Owners Club, as
they allow that to do that.
Well, that's a token they give you and ask you to put on here because it is an indication it's a senior car. You know, it's one senior status. And that's what that is.
You've had it since original new?
No, I've had the car only 9 years.
Nine years. But this is where was this paint
job
put on?
I had it done. I totally disassembled the car.
Yeah.
And came back
from
scratch.
Where are you located, Virginia?
Next to Roanoke.
Oh, Roanoke, out in the mountains there.
Yeah, right in the mountains.
Yeah.
Are you the envy of your club colleague?
Yeah.
He says he's never
going to travel around a little bit with us locally.
Yeah, we do.
On special occasions.
Only we've been most all states east of the Mississippi with it.
Is that right?
Yeah. Now we got Florida. We've trailered it to various functions. New York, Massachusetts.
You probably wouldn't know you had it behind you this week.
That's right. With that rig, it's beautiful.
What kind of power you got in this one?
Yeah.
That's a 454 Chevy.
What's the body?
It's a Holiday.
Holiday. Yeah. Okay.
Holiday Imperial. Yeah. It has a 454 Chevy chassis.
Yeah.
Wow. It does very good. It's a nice, powerful engine. It wasn't available with a Ford product. I wanted to get it with Ford, but it wasn't available.
I'm putting diesels in most of those big ones.
Yeah.
Mr. Harrington, you're face to face with the designer of this car. What final word do you have to say, bridging the generation?
Well, I'd like to tell him that he did one fabulous job on it.
Well, to me, it looks just as fresh and nice an automotive creation as I could draw today.
Yeah, that's true. It is. It's still, if they could make them today like that, they could sell a lot of them.
Yeah. I stop to think those first ones cost about $2,500. You couldn't get a damn old pickup truck with a tin body on the back of it for that.
Mr. Arrington paid.
I paid $7,000 for it.
$7,000. Partial basket case.
Oh yeah, but it's
They listed, I think, around $2,500.
Yeah, $2,500 to $2,800 in that range. Yeah. Oh, the car is easily now valued at, most people appraise the car that's in the club, you know, appraise the car somewhere 75 plus.
Yeah,
value.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know Mr. Ford would be proud of it.
And the voice you're hearing is that of Eugene T. Gregory, known as Bob Gregory, to his many fans and associates and friends who designed this gorgeous automobile, and Mr. L.D. Arrington from
Rocky Mount, Virginia.
Rocky Mount, Virginia, who is the owner, the proud owner of this restored 1940
beautiful
Lincoln Continental Classic.
I'm actually got some pretty colored pictures of it.
Yeah, it shows
up well.
And this is Dave Crippen in St. Augustine, Florida, in the first part of January, 1987.
Freezing.
And it's freezing. We're freezing our eyes.
It's probably warmed up the mountains of Roanoke.
It probably is.
What's the temperature today, Bob?
Around 50 right now, 55.
We got a little sun. We've got a lot of wind.
The wind is what's making it so chilly.
Oh, mean. Yeah, the high humidity, you know, the humidity's up about 80%. And today we've had some of the prettiest weather through November, 80,
really?
82 every day. Just beautiful.
And today, zap.
Never fails.
But
it's better than rain.
Right, you are. No rain. Yes.
It's better than rain we had yesterday.
Yeah, you can manage this, but that damn rain, man, come across here in sheets.
Well, we're going to do some location shooting now with Bob and with Mr. Arrington's 1940 Lincoln Continental. That's right. Mr. Arrington, the status of this car is that you've won senior awards in which categories?
The LCOC.
The Lincoln Zephyr Continental, the Lincoln Zephyr Owners Club.
The
senior, major senior award.
Yes.
Okay. And beyond that,
the AACA,
which is
Antique Automobile Club of America.
You have won a
senior status award, which is, and also the Grand National First Place Award. The very first Grand National.
What year?
In 1980.
The very first Grand National. Of the Antique Automobile Club of America.
Right.
You won first prize in 1980.
Right.
Right. And the one on the left?
Well, this is the senior status in 1979. And then in 1980, it won Grand National.
Grand National winner,
award,
the very first one. Uh-huh.
Right.
And, yes, go ahead.
And then the Classic Car Club of America, it won senior status in it in the first year out, which was 1979, the first year we showed the car.
Right.
And that's what this represents,
right.
Senior status in the Classic Car Club.
What is there left for you to win?
Well, we won all of the top awards that's
top
available
to
us.
So you're
we won them all that's available to us. Just America status now.
America status?
Yeah, that's about it. You know, just preservation awards and things like that for, you know, for bringing it back a second time around and what have you. But as far as we won all of the major awards that's available to win with the car.
Fantastic car. Fantastic restoration. What did you think of the What do you think of the V12 engine?
I love the engine. It's very smooth, quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have never put a lot of miles on one, so I don't know about the endurance of it. I've had people tell me that they, you know, are super engines, and then you hear others back in the in that era of time in the late 40s and 50s, a lot of people, you know. Was against it, was down on the V12 engine.
Yeah, right.
I think that is primarily due to lack of trained mechanics to work on them,
mm-hmm.
to keep them
really?
Functioning properly at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a lot of, to do with it.
When did it switch to a V8?
In 49, just after this year.
The V12?
48, yeah. 48.
The V12 continued through the 42 model?
48 model. V12 continued through 48.
I mean, 48. Through the 42, then it, and from 46 to 48.
Right.
It still had the V12.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. 49 was the 48 was the last of the V12.
What do you think of the integrated flush headlights into the fenders?
Oh, I love that feature.
Yeah, that really one of its distinctive features.
And that's one of the distinctive features about the 40 versus the 41. It doesn't have it has the park light incorporated in here. And the 41, you know, has the park light sitting here on the fender.
On the top of the fender.
Yeah.
But this is integrated top of the bezel. Huh?
Yes, and it's just a little more elegant look.
It's a beautiful look. Yeah.
And the way the grille comes up into points is a more elegant look than the 41. They put a band all the way around the grille.
A chrome band. Which cheapened it, I think.
Made it look a little heavier.
Yeah, right. This is more in keeping with Edsel Ford's idea of keeping it simple, making it clean and elegant. Utmost simplicity.
Yes.
Do you think it's a good body? He's looking, standing here at the marvelous pointed prow of the 1940 Lincoln. Do you think it's a body with Edsel Ford's ideas about elegance and style and taste?
I certainly do. I certainly do. I think it does a very fine job with that.
And the bumpers were steel in those days.
Yeah, it was real steel. Real steel.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Mike Shea, you work for a Ford dealership in Gainesville, Florida. What's the name of the dealership?
It's Shaw and Keter Ford.
And it's strictly a Ford dealership.
Yes, they got their license from Mr. Ford in 1924.
Really?
Yes.
And they've kept it continuously since then?
Yes, they have. However, on January 1st, they just turned over the ownership to a new owner. The man's name is Paul West.
Mm-hmm. Looks good for the continuation of the dealership?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you drive yourself?
Right now, I'm driving a Thunderbird.
1987 Thunderbird.
That's right.
What do you think of it?
I'm very pleased with the car. It's absolutely a fine highway car, a nice personal and small family car, just outstanding on the highway, especially at high speed. It's a high-speed cruiser, and it gives a beautiful ride. I happen to enjoy rear-wheel drive cars, and I think Ford has done a magnificent job with the Thunderbird for 87.
Right. What do you see in the future for automotive styling, from your perspective as a longtime Ford salesman?
Well, I know that
automobile salesman.
Ford went out on a limb in 1983 when they came out with the aero look in the Thunderbird, and everyone, I guess, sort of held their breath a little bit, but it certainly has caught on, and as a result, Ford is now out ahead of the pack in styling, and the others are moving along now trying to catch up with the aero look. Many of the others are still working with the more
boxy
look rather than the aero look, and I think these cars are only going to get more and more streamlined for the future.
Mm-hmm. You're going lower?
Well, they need to maintain a certain amount of road clearance because of the way they're used around the country.
But I mean, the outline will go down to a wedge, perhaps?
In the front end, mm-hmm. they will certainly drop down a little more in front, I'm sure,
but
to cut through the air.
But we're going to stay with the teardrop.
Oh, it will always have the teardrop effect. The Ford engineers found that out when they came out with the Lincoln Zephyr in 1936.
Right.
They had an aerodynamic style. Of course, that was the first successfully marketed aerodynamic car in America, starting with the 36 Lincoln Zephyr.
And the Lincoln Continental, which used a Zephyr platform, you think was a stylish aerodynamic design with some exceptions.
That's true. They were able to take a streamlined car and to give it a classical look, which we find nearly 50 years later now, still to be one of the most attractive cars ever manufactured.
Will?
Yeah.
Hi, Gary.
Well, we got to bring the car.
Start that again. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The Lincoln Continental. That's over here.
Sure.
Yeah. Go ahead. And, the Lincoln Continental. What do you see that as a continuation of the aerodynamic trend started by Ford with the Lincoln Zephyr?
Well, what they were able to do was to take a very advanced car for its time and to stylize it and develop a classic car out of it, which is still one of the most beautiful cars ever designed nearly 50 years later.
Thank you, Michael Shea.
You're going to bring them out?
you do that hood ornament, Bob?
Just a golf ball and a spear.
A golf ball and a spear?
He bought that in about 2 seconds, that sketch. I think I still have the old pencil sketch, just to...
Do you really?
Keep it simple, yeah.
He bought your sketches pretty quickly, didn't he?
That's my longest detail in the car came out.
Isn't that marvelous? Sketching and chatting.
Yeah, he liked that.
Yeah, uh-huh.
He liked it.
You'd pencil out the sketch and he'd approve it.
Yeah, right away.
That's marvelous.
Save time, no modeling.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah. You say you sketched that up right in front of it? Yeah, this little gizmo.
Yeah, yeah.
That came from a golf ball.
Well, yeah, that was the thing that gave me the idea. I was joking when I said, gee, you can take a golf ball and put a spear through it. So we sized it to match the size of a golf ball approximately.
Oh,
I'll tell him
I'll
sketch that up.
Oh, that's great. Incredible.
You had a concern at that time, you know, there was a safety campaign on about spears on hood ornaments.
Oh, God, yes.
People get speared with them.
Right.
So I was a little sharp with that at one time, so we kind of nosed it off.
Mm-hmm.
Rounded it up.
Inverted the spear.
Time of the day, or whether the sun hits or the light hits, you get a pattern, beautiful pattern reflection.
Is it the ascending pattern that does it?
Well,
and the slight wind blown pattern.
The highlights hit on a different radius on each one. You see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A deliberate, Bob?
No, it just turned out that.
It just happened that way. Yeah. Uh huh. The cooling was the problem you were attacking.
The center of the fan's down about here.
Right. Uh-huh.
And
about the bumper level.
The old grill was up here.
Uh-huh.
About this wide here, and it tapered down here. See.
Right. Uh-huh.
So we didn't get any air in the center of the fan.
Incredible.
Oh, that was enough for normal conditions.
But not for hauling.
No,
trailers. No. Out in the southwest, you really needed it. Yeah.
So all these surfaces worked out nicely.
They worked out beautifully.
Yeah.
They're so classic, and they're so durable, and they're so elegant.
I don't recall whether they pieced the hood out from the old original stamping, or whether they made a new die for that. I don't know. You see the other hood, the original hood was about that much higher.
Yeah. So you flattened it and lengthened it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seemed to me we made one with a straight opening up here. Well,
in like maybe 42?
Oh, about in the middle of the production, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was on the second series. But it didn't do away with that joint.
Right.
No, we didn't put it there for decoration. It was to save the 2 hours of labor.
Uh-huh. I understand that there was quite a bit of discussion about putting the spare tire inside the trunk.
Well, I was telling Dave, about that, we wouldn't have had any trunk space in there.
Yeah, right.
Is this openable now?
Yes, let me get the key to do it with.
That's what the rear tire
It pleased Mr. Ford to have the tire on.
It pleased Edsel, huh?
Sure, well, they sold these kits after a while, you know, they put on
Cadillac.
Oh,
yeah.
It stuck way the hell on.
It's still today referred to as a Continental kit.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see that by the time he got the spare wheel in there, it was one of those
places. How much space do you think you've got in there, Bob? In the trunk.
By the time you put the spare tire in there, there wouldn't have been any
right.
space.
Yeah.
But it worked out nicely. It finished so.
Oh, as you said this morning, the natural utilitarian aspect of where to put the trunk
yeah.
fitted so. It fitted
of course,
so.
The idea of a tire on the back of a car goes back to the year one, you know.
Oh, Max. As a matter of fact, it would have been more revolutionary to put it inside.
Well, some of them had two on the back. The old.
Oh pack, yes, I remember.
Arrows, yeah. You know, the big old leather strap around them.
Yeah.
We should probably get started while we have this beautiful sun.
Good. Please, yeah. Whenever you're ready,
so
we're ready. We're just waiting for you.
You would want a pretty setting,
isn't that incredible?
Yeah. I didn't come back here. We didn't see this real estate, you know.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. This place, you know, right against the building there.
Mm-hmm.
The sun is just right.
She
no,
back?
She stays.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fine. Okay. Good.
Chill.
Yeah. A little chilly.
No, that's beautiful. That's setting.
This is probably the most beautiful setting that we could find in this area, in the St. Augustine area.
I can see it.
Yeah, just incredible.
No, it's
terrific. Go ahead, Aaron.
Make a wonderful shot for a catalog or publicity picture.
Wouldn't it though? Yeah.
Yeah.
Ross Cousins would be gnashing his teeth.
Yeah.
We saw this one.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Live oak. Up on St. Simon's Island and up on Jekyll Island, you know, up in Georgia, just over the Florida line, that beautiful tree like this. Beautiful.
Really?
Great backgrounds.
What kind of tree is that?
That's a live oak.
A live oak?
Live oak.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they've been there hundreds of years. Those old stand.
So we've got this gorgeous 1940 Continental that you designed, Lincoln Continental, sitting on a grassy knoll atop the 16th green, with a grove of live oak as a backdrop.
Yeah,
still green.
Setting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mr. L.D. Arrington's car.
You think Lincoln would run a series of beautiful up-to-date?
I did. 7th Green, Dick Johnson. Dick Johnson, you're the head groundskeeper here.
Yes, sir.
At the Ponce de Leon Golf and Country Club in St. Augustine.
Resort, and it's now called Resort and Convention Center. Aha!
Yeah. Uh-huh. You're expanding.
Lance Ringhaver, he and his brother, they own it jointly now?
No, just Lance and three other people.
Lance and three others.
Yeah, his brother's not in it.
Yeah.
What's his last name?
Ringhaven.
Ringhaven? You knew the Ringhaven?
Oh, I knew the father, you know, when he first came to St. Augustine, the boatyard over the trawlers.
Dick Johnson has been very helpful, extremely helpful in allowing us to use this gorgeous 7th green at the country club as the backdrop for this, the location shooting for the...
Find a more beautiful setting.
Dick, how'd you happen to get down here in St. Augustine?
Well, I retired from the military. Went to college and ended up here in St. Augustine.
You're a landscape architect now.
I'm a golf course superintendent.
You're a golf course superintendent, but you're a specialist in golf course landscape.
Well, maintenance mostly.
Maintenance. Landscape maintenance. Okay, good. Right. And you certainly did a gorgeous job. This is a fantastic
What is the extent of the acreage they have out here? Does it run clear out to the river?
I don't want to be quoted out, but I'm going to guess we're pushing. We're right at 400 or more. Well, it goes into the marsh and then highway almost up to those buildings. Up to the first buildings up there.
Yeah, where the airport's a couple miles up further.
Right.
Yeah.
How many acres?
I'm going to guess it's right around 400.
400, yeah.
Right around 400.
Lake.
Oh, gosh, yes.
This is tidewater coming up through there. They dug these holes to mound up there. Yeah.
These are natural ponds, ponds.
The drain for that one is right underneath. It goes right under that trap over there.
Oh, it does. Oh, okay.
And it moved with the tide.
Yeah.
You ever have a flood?
Oh, sure. I've seen this whole road and everything else here underwater.
Yeah, the whole thing flooded.
Yeah.
But it drains away naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not a continual thing.
That's why you have that marsh grass.
We're exceptionally high right now in tide.
I know.
We're about 2 feet higher.
Two, 3 feet above normal now.
Yes, sir.
Is that the wind condition?
Wind condition and that phenomena they're talking about, the sun, moon, and the earth all lined up in one area.
The juxtaposition of the planets.
You get a full moon tide, the tide comes up
foot or so above normal for
and
3 foot.
Blowing out of the northeast.
The northeast drives it up too.
Ah, okay. Yeah. It just happens once in every 10 years.
Well, every month you usually get a higher tide.
Well, I know that, but I mean the special conjunction
that
Dick is talking about.
Yeah, the moon attraction.
That's where the yellow flag is 16 green. See the yellow flag over there?
Mm-hmm.
That's 12 green. I stood on the back of 12 green two Thanksgiving days ago, and there was solid water from that green all the way to the marsh.
Well, that's when they had the storm and took the pier out and whatnot.
Right now, we're watching the crew of Will Lawson and Rich Whiskey shoot the exterior shots of the L.D. Arrington's 1940 Lincoln Continental Cabriolet designed by Bob Gregory, and we've just completed a series of shots in which Bob Gregory walked around the car and pointed out the design components at the design classic design simplicity.
It goes back almost 50 years ago when I designed that car.
50 years.
Almost
incredible.
Half a century.
I'm glad I met you, sir. You made a nice car.
You made an incredible car.
That and hundreds of thousands of Fords along with it.
Bob Gregory, as you know, was also design chief for Ford as well. Yeah,
you know,
he had Ford products. Yeah. And so he.
The only thing they remember me by is this car now. The hell of the Fords and the trucks and the tractors.
How long did it take you to make the design sketch for the Lincoln Continental?
I'd say 35 minutes.
35 minutes.
That simple. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, we had a lot of it already designed. You see, the grill and the fenders came from the Zephyr.
Uh-huh.
So all we needed was a profile to see the people. I was telling this morning, it was a little template, cut out, a piece of masonite, and myself and one of the boys in my office, we just clayed up in between under the template, and that was the design of the car.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was established.
But Mr. Ford, you waited for Mr. Ford to come in, and you showed him what?
He said, that's it, we like it.
We'll take it.
Well, you know, we had been trying to build a car like that at the Ford company. But Mr. Ford's original concept of having a car
Mr.
like
Edson.
That was to build it on a Ford basis,
mm-hmm.
to glorify the Ford product. But the production people, the branch plants, people say, my God, you got all these branches all over the country and all over the world, and you don't have space to build a car like that. Well, it was the interference with production schedules and things like that. I mean, there's nothing that'd be interchangeable with the Ford car, you see. But it wasn't until you call the big old Lincoln, the great big chauffeur-driven
yes.
Lincoln's limousines and so on, they finally phased out or went out with a chauffeur and hard times along in the late 30s, and we found we had a space and a few hundred people who could do nice paint work and leather trim work and so on. So we decided we're going to base it on a Zephyr. We had the parts there and the engine, everything under one roof, see? So that is how it happened to become a Zephyr or a Lincoln instead of a Ford.
Probably not.
Yeah.
When did they have the V12? What year did the V12 come out?
You mean the big old Lincoln?
Yeah.
Well, that ran all through the 30s.
Did it?
Up until the end of the 30s, about 38, 39. It was just no more production. We couldn't sell enough of them, half a dozen a month, something like that. They were all custom bodies mostly. And that's the reason we had space in the plant to, along with the Zephyr. And the engine and everything is running gear, wheels, axles to build this car. So it became a Lincoln instead of a Ford, see? Well, I mean, that's a fact.
Right.
As silly as it sounds, with all the Ford manufacturing facilities, hundreds of plants, and thousands of workers, and even Mr. Ford himself couldn't get a car like that going until he found a particular set of conditions, which all went together very quickly.
It gelled.
Mm-hmm. Gelled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The V12. Tell us about the V12 engine in terms of its composition.
You mean the old original V12?
Yeah, the old original V12.
It was a great big truck engine.
Was it?
Beautiful finish, beautiful quality,
mm-hmm.
but it was heavy. Very durable,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't particularly smooth.
It had been in the Lincoln line since the beginning, had it not?
Well, the old V8, Leland's old.
They used a V8.
V8. Mm-hmm. Lincoln, yeah.
How long did that last?
From the beginning, all through the 20s, on up to about, I think it was about 32, we switched over to the first V12.
And who developed the V12?
Old Frank Johnson.
Of the Lincoln.
Old Cadillac.
Right.
Leland days. Mm-hmm. He goes back to the old first V8 Cadillac, 1914. Mm. So the engineering was real antique.
You have a V8 and you have a V12.
Well, the old Leland, when the Fords bought Lincoln from Leland's,
yes,
about 1921 or 22, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. 22, Craig, yes.
They inherited the old original V8 Lincoln engine.
And whose idea was it to add four cylinders to it?
Well, there was a demand for more power.
And
a smoother engine. And
okay.
So they had competition. And Cadillac had a V12, Packard had a V12.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it was
Marmon
quite easy.
Had a V12. Mm-hmm. In other words, it was a craze of V12 engines temporarily.
Right. Uh-huh.
Not that they were needed. I mean, it was just a new way to sell cars, the latest thing, you know. And so Lincoln got into the V12. They all had a V12, which you actually phased out.
Right. Uh-huh.
They didn't need it for power, and also engines were increasingly better balanced. They had facilities to balance crankshaft and balance parts,
mm-hmm.
so they got a very smooth engine. And one of the difficulties with the Lincoln engine was it wasn't a 90 degree engine. It was a 70 or 65 or 70 degree.
It wasn't a 90 degree V.
No. And you could know it was inherently out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
You get a little tremor in it. You can feel it in this car today.
Mm-hmm.
If you hold your steering wheel, it's get a little tremor in it, you know?
Yeah, that feeling.
It's
Mr.
not silky
Harrington.
Smooth like a mm-hmm. 90 degree Cadillac V8 or
yeah,
some new
that.
V8s.
Mm-hmm.
You always have a little tremor. But the old Leland engine was that way too, and it was like driving a four cylinder white truck. The old Lincoln V8.
Right.
It's just like an old four-cylinder white truck. It was so damn rough.
Let me look around here so Mr. Shea can get a good shot of you.
But
this
durable,
way.
Durable as hell, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, stay with us, Dick. Yeah.
But later V12s. I mean, they're silky smooth. This the V6s they have now are like silk, you know. But they've developed much better balance.
It's strictly a 90-degree angle.
Yeah, 90-degree, yeah.
What about a straight inline 8?
Well, they were very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
They had nothing smooth or nice than that Packard's old straight 8.
They would be okay.
All right, that distance.
If you would just come stand right alongside the car and shoot him from the front, that would be great.
Good. Design, you think, well, this ought to have beefed up a little bit, or this and that, but that's right on.
I agree with you.
Ask you a question. Yeah.
Most people sense it the same way. I don't know of a car that age that is as much admired for its perfection of appearance.
You're right.
I'm not the only one that said that. I mean, a great many automotive commentators,
absolutely,
art critics and whatnot.
Indeed. I understand like 1948 or 49 when it was declared a classic at that
early
Museum of Modern Art.
At that early stage in life.
Well, there was considerable criticism of the second version of the being at the front end.
Right.
But that there were several reasons for that. One is that we have to beef up the whole Lincoln line to be competitive with Cadillac. You know, people there say, well, it doesn't look like as much car as the Cadillac. Cadillac, you know, loomed up with those big bumpers.
Right.
Big square shoulders, and that was the trend in those days. And I always had the feeling, compared to Cadillac, the people who appreciated the beefiness and the bulk they were buying didn't have the eye for the delicate beauty of this car. So
right.
This car is a delicate beauty. What you bought from the Cadillac was bulk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's the reason they build these pickup trucks that way today with great big square front ends on them. You know, it looks important, see? It looks like a chair. I can run the hell over you. You know what I mean? Get out of the way.
You got an interesting theory this morning, Bob, that Edsel Ford being about 5'6".
Yeah.
And Harley Earl being 6'7".
Harley went for the great big bulky treatments, you know, big bolts and big bolts and all. He was a great big brute of a guy.
Yeah.
And Edsel Ford was a much smaller stature.
Slight.
Slight, small feet, very dapper dresser and so on.
flamboyant.
The flamboyant outgoing bully.
That's
the,
right.
Bully that Harley Earl was.
Right.
He was the sensitive, introspective,
that's
true
a
gentleman.
A lot to that, yeah.
With lots of taste and lots of...
That's the Ford would in no way have accepted that most of the design. He never, as I mentioned today this morning, that he never once commented on the appearance of any of the General Motors cars that pleased him. Or, you know, like some people might say, well, gee, that's nice. Let's just see if we can pick up that effect. You know, he didn't shine any of that.
Yeah.
But we had developed our own design set up. They were very pleasing, but we did beat them up after a while. We had to beat the Ford up some of the other cars.
Well, you yourself, you said this morning that the your redesigned 42 front end was again a question of what.
Well, we had to make the car look a little more important on the road.
Cadillac had come up
with
the
old body. You see, that old body had started with Zephyr 1936.
Yes.
They got up to 1946, 47, 48.
Oh, I think
they
about 42.
Yeah, well, 42. Well, I was the first one that was beefed up. Just in the last production before the war, so the production stopped.
Right.
It was a very effective front end. It went together better than I thought it would.
Oh, beautifully,
The matchup, the old body work, and the newer heavier fenders. I liked it just as well.
How did you do it? How did you happen to fashion that particular front, 42 front end?
Well, we just got away from the sharp delicacy of this one.
Right.
And got a little more beef in the hood, a little more beef in the fenders. It complemented
and the grill?
The grill
design?
Yeah, the grill was heavy and low and wide.
Deliberately so?
Yeah, oh yeah, entirely different concept.
Yeah.
More or less what they're doing today, you know, they got that
right. That
hunk of bumper that looks like a railroad tie across the front end of most of these cars. Great big black rubber, hunk of rubber and plastic. Yeah. Some of them.
You intimated this morning that you had a bit of a time convincing Edsel Ford that you should do that to the 42.
Yeah, that's right. It took a little tactful explanation and pantomime and comments. It took about 3 visits to my office before I got him shaked around. he didn't bend easy.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of frown and he'd want to hear more about it. And in the meantime, I guess some of the salespeople in the field, you know, were coming in with the same idea. They wanted to, in talking to the car shows and the meetings, I gathered a lot of information. They said, well, now don't say I said it, but just accumulate some information, enough background, so we can't do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't go to Mr. Ford and ask him that.
They'd ask you to ask.
You're
the liaison.
Yeah.
The catalyst.
I caught the blunder, but it didn't work.
But your technique honed to a fine edge was respectful innovation.
That's right. It got so that after working with Mr. Edsel Ford over the years, I was able to tell when the pressure was building up or whether it was becoming effective or not. I mean, I could watch his expressions, and when he left the office at night, whether he smiled or whether he looked a little sour, you know.
What would he say when he left the office? What did he say? See you in the morning, Bob?
Yeah, it just he was very... He wasn't gushy.
Yeah, no.
All business.
All business, yeah. But he wasn't. But this marvelous situation where you and he would find a...
Well,
tell us about that.
Well, he wanted to get out of the swim of things. He didn't want people coming up to him.
Pressuring him,
when he didn't feel like talking.
So he'd come over to Bob Gregory's design studio, and what would he do?
He'd come in there and sit on the edge of the drawing board, way in the back. I had a couple old cars parked back there, some of the old Lincoln limousines.
Right.
And he'd go sit in one of those, and we just talk about the things, you know.
He'd chalk and chat.
Yeah, that's right. He'd give him a little rest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
they say at one point that Bob, things are really getting tough.
Well, he wasn't feeling well, you know. He could reach in his pocket and take a damn bag of pills out. He was on medication
going
toward the end.
Yeah.
And he said, look, I have to take these damn things 2 or 3 times a day.
Yeah.
Then he was chewing Bemis Pepsin gum all the time.
Oh, was his favorite? It seemed to settle his stomach.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he chewed that all the time.
His stomach ulcers.
Yeah. I can see that coming on in the last couple, 2-3 years.
It must have been heartrending for you to watch this gradual deterioration of this fine man.
The last time last trip he made to Florida, the winter of the spring he died.
Yes.
Normally he'd come back feeling relaxed, looking good.
Was that the last time you saw him?
Yeah, he came to my office after he came back.
Waste of a really remarkable man. He couldn't have done it without you.
Well, it's too bad we couldn't have carried him further. That's a
marvelous.
Damn bunch of people came in there from General Motors and just loused them. I suppose all the changes that had to come in the company.
But it's too bad that Edsel Ford
couldn't have been the one responsible.
Yeah, it would have been a classic post-war car.
Well, you can blame it on the old man. The old man was responsible. Right. I hate to say it, but I could see that. I observed conversations between them. And when he came in, and the old man come in to find Edsel, he knew he'd find him in my place. Mm-hmm. I had the boys get out of the way and leave us up there and talk.
Right.
That was kind of a standing rule.
Mm-hmm.
Down in the basement to sneak a smoke. Let the old man smell it though.
Right, yeah.
You still say you couldn't have improved on that design?
No. No, I swear to Lord I couldn't. If I was getting out of tonight, the portions are... Well, you see right from here now, the tile looms up a little.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, that'd be my first impression.
Mm-hmm. What would you have done?
Well, I'd like to have seen the rear fenders were always a little bit pinched in, squeezed in.
Okay.
And I don't recall whether that was carried over from the Zephyr.
Undoubtedly.
And I'd like to see the tail end of the fenders just moved out maybe 3 inches on each side, give it a little more stance.
Would it have given you a little more solid look
to
the rear?
Yeah, a little more platform. See?
Oh, okay.
It's a little bit pinched.
Mm-hmm.
In relation to the size of the trunk and the.
Now, was the problem there that the wheel size was standard for the Zephyr in that era?
No, Mr. Ford wanted that. He wanted that pulled in effect. Now, the Ford simple. That's spelled by Continental. Continental manners,
lowercase,
cooking,
lowercase
food,
C,
Continental hotels, you know.
Right, yeah.
Continental ladies wear stuff. So it was a natural. Of course, there was 3 or 4 cars built in the old days called Continental. Matter of fact, Continental Motors built a little tin can back in the early 30s called the Continental. Right. Built by the Continental Motors in Detroit.
Right,
But it was a mouthful. Shorter name might have been a little more appropriate, but it was appropriate.
Went very well.
They understood it.
You had said earlier that Mr. Ford traveled a lot in his work with Ford Overseas factories, and so he had an appreciation
for
the Continental flair.
It was a full coverage name that took in everything that they intended the car to represent.
Right.
Held up well. Of course, the latest Continental, don't ask me about that. It's not sour grapes on my part. It's pitiful what it's turned into.
Bob, can you pinpoint the...
I hate to see one alongside of this one.
Can you pinpoint the day when Edsel said, why don't we call it the Continental?
Well, that's not how it came about. There's never any expression that you mentioned. I don't recall the first time.
First time you talked about it?
No, I can't even recall that.
There was never any day when he said, Bob, gorgeous. Let's call it the Continental.
No, it wasn't on the order of the Ford Mercury.
All right, okay.
That was another story. But I can't recall exactly when the subject of the name came up. He might have discussed it with the salesman at the time.
Okay. Yeah.
And people of that nature. He never discussed it with me. So it came on that. There was never any period of time when there was a discussion as to what it would be called.
Mm-hmm.
I like the first one.
Is that your impression, Mr. Arrington?
Yes.
Continental shows up.
Some of these Continental boys know a hell of a lot more about the factory of the car than I do. Even done the research on it. They know more about why this tail light is that way, which series had a molding here, and they know a hell of a lot more about it than I do.
Where does the word Continental show up first in the advertising?
In 40.
In 40?
Yeah, it was in 40.
I thought so too, yeah.
I think it
was the Lincoln Zephyr Continental.
It had special in there. The Lincoln Zephyr Special Continental
Cabaret.
Relay.
Exactly. They had to have a name in order to title of the first one.
Right.
It had to be an official name.
Well, of course, you had the Zephyr. You had the Zephyr. And then you had to differentiate what this new car was.
So that's special
right.
was
that's
it.
Right.
So it was the Continental.
Yeah, they had to pin it down somewhere along the line for titling purposes.
And in 41, of course, it was a full-fledged Lincoln.
And 41 up through 48, I think, was that way. This car doesn't have the word Continental nowhere on the car.
No. Here's an authentic 40 Lincoln Zephyr Continental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't realize that it wasn't on there until I looked your car over.
It doesn't require it. It has its own identity.
It's true.
It doesn't have to be advertised.